Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is June 23rd, 2004. Today's session number is ERD 2004-08. Today's speaker is Dan Erlander. And the lesson for today is St. Francis of Assisi, The Little Poor Ones, Thousands Summoned Out. Let's listen in.
Sound system, and I'm Dan Erlander, and this is the third session on St. Francis of Assisi. I'm going to begin this morning by reading a story, a St. Francis story, and this fits in. Where we are because we're at Rivo Torto, the crooked stream, which was kind of they would always look back, the first Franciscans. These were the wonderful years, with just a small group living in total poverty on the earth, in little huts, in the woods, with the stream. And by the way, I have a map of the whole Mediterranean area there now, because Francis is going to take us to Spain and to Syria and to Egypt. And then I also have this very accurate, I always get mixed up on these, so I do it myself, because the citadel's on top, going up the mountain, and the city of Assisi, and about 3/4 of the mile down is San Damiano. And then down at towards the bottom, or in the plain, is St. Mary's, or often when you read the more accurate name, is Porzia and Cola. And then about 1,500 yards from Porzia and Cola, or St. Mary's, is Rivo Torto. So do you have it all? And then somewhere out there is Mount Laverna. And the Mount Laverna is in Tuscany, and I didn't look up how close that was to Assisi. So I have no idea where that is, so just floating in the air. So here's a story about the first brothers as they're together, and one of the incidents. We have seen that the rule commanded the friars to welcome all visitors. By the rule, this is what was approved in Rome by the Pope, commanded the friars to welcome all visitors, including thieves and robbers. Now, along about the year 1213, Brother Angelo, who, like his namesake Angelo, was a former knight and was living at the hermitage at Mount Cassil. I don't know where that is. As porter, he one day received a visit from three notorious robbers who, lacking travelers to rob in the neighboring woods, had come to the convent to beg alms. He gave them a very poor reception. "What, murderers like you, not satisfied with robbing honest folk of the fruit of their toil, you want to take the little belongings to God's servants, you who have no respect for God or man and don't deserve that the earth should hold you, get out of here and don't let me see you again." Perhaps the fiery guardian, this is Brother Angelo, called on his sword, which in former days he used to thrust through rascals like them. Be that as it may, the robbers withdrew in high anger, but scarcely had they left when Francis returned, laden down with the bread and wine which he had collected as alms. Learning what happened, he reproached the porter. "You have behaved like a man with no religion," he said. "Does not the gospel which we have promised to follow declare that it is the sick and not the well who need a doctor? Take this bread and this wine, in the name of obedience and go and find these robbers. Run up hill and dale until you find them, and as soon as you see them, shout, "Come, brother robbers." "Come and eat good things, Brother Francis begs you to accept." And they will come. Then this is continues a quote from Francis. "And they will come. Then spread a cloth on the ground and put this bread and this wine on it, to which you will add some eggs and cheese. And serve these unfortunate men with humility and good humor until they are satisfied. Then, and not until then, ask them not to kill anybody anymore." Adding that serving God is not nearly so hard as their profession. "And I do not doubt that the Lord in his mercy will inspire them with better sentiments." Nor was their conversion long delayed, for from this time on, says the chronicler, they were to be seen every day at the hermitage, bringing on their backs the firewood needed by the friars. Not only did they pledge themselves to gain their living from then on by honest toil, but all three ended up by entering the order in which they died the death of saints. This is lamb power. Do you get the connection? This is lamb power. Surprise power. Another part of the gospel is to do not resist anyone. And the brothers now are in their place at Rivo Torto. And along comes a peasant with a donkey. Looks at the shack where they're living and says that he and his donkey need the shack and they're going to take it over. So Francis and the brothers pack up and leave in obedience to Jesus saying, "Resist no one." It's kind of, we would have some questions about that. But this shows the upside-down world of Francis. And I want to explain two parts of that to start to visualize what his converted mind is like. One of them, for most of us, sometimes we measure our life by what we buy and accumulate. You know, like for me, 1965 was the year that I bought my first Dodge Dart, or my only Dodge Dart, slant six. And then you go on there to when you did this, and you bought this, and you bought your first house, and then you bought the new car, and then the year of the refrigerator, and then the year of more accumulation. And that is sometimes in our society thought of as the upward mobility, and you have to turn that completely around. We tend to have a fear that we'll lose things, so we buy insurance, we have burglar alarms. That is our fear. Okay, turn it around. For Francis, the life was to be continually losing everything until you have nothing. And then if he had a fear, is that he might get something. Does this seem like a real... In fact, once a beggar came to the little hut and asked for food, and there was no food. No food. So Francis gave them their Bible. Now, can you imagine in the 1200s how much actually having a Bible was worth? So... Before the brothers got back to stop him, he said, "Sorry, we don't have any food, but you can have our Bible here." And came back, and now there was no Bible, which sounds crazy. However, psychologists and others who have analyzed Francis' total life have decided that he was well. Just very, very different. Now, when they were driven from Rivo Torto, then the there was a Benedictine monastery where they went for a while, and then this monastery gave them St. Mary's. The Benedictines owned St. Mary's, and now that they had no place, the Benedictines gave it to them to use, which was a former Benedictine monastery, which means it had a chapel, one of them that Francis rebuilt with the stones, and it had other buildings. But of course, Francis could not own anything, so they made a deal that they would only borrow it. And so their payment was a bushel basket of fish from the river once a year. So that's interesting. So now they have a place, and then this, St. Mary's, this becomes the heart and the center of the Franciscan movement as it spreads out through the world. I'd like to go to another place for a while now to talk about the one whom we today call St. Clair, because her story and the story of Francis are so intertwined. Now you have to change from, if you saw the movie Brother, Son, Sister, Moon, they were young teeny boppers holding hands, kind of dancing through the flowers around Assisi as kids. And if you'll notice on the chart here, Francis is 14 years older than Claire. But here's how they get acquainted, that Francis preaches often in Assisi at the cathedral. And Claire comes every one of his sermons, every one of the sermons. And she is converted by him. And she is only about 12 years old. And she receives this vision of the whole upside-down way of living. However, she is to be married at 12. Now, to know what a strong woman Claire is, that at 12, she talked her parents, her uncles, her relatives, the entire extended family, who were all of the nobility, talks them out of making her marry this man. And then thereafter, she continues to hear Francis' sermons, and there is evidence that they did meet sometimes and become friends. But if you read the whole story of Francis, he was very careful about ever being with a woman, which is a whole other area. But he was very careful about it, but they did know each other and they were friends. And then she sensed the call to join Francis and the brothers. And how does she get away? How does she do this? She runs away from home and runs to St. Mary's. And there, you know, I get these places mixed up. Whether it was a St. Mary's or St. Damiano's, I'll tell you by tomorrow. here it is. It is St. Mary. She flees to St. Mary's, and there, before the relatives can come and find her, Francis cuts all of her hair off, which was a sign that she was a completely new person and was making the vow of poverty. And therefore, every report was she was a very beautiful young woman and also very intelligent. She both spoke Latin and also wrote in Latin. Was a prolific reader and a skilled seamstress and a musician, and she loved music. It was her important part of her life. So running away now, she has become a sister. And then she was taken, because of the danger from her family, she was taken to the Benedictine monastery, to the nuns, 2 miles away. And then 2 weeks ago, I mean 2 weeks later, her sister Agnes also sneaked out of their home, escaped, and joined the sister. And then Uncle Manaldo becomes extremely angry, forms a, what would you call them in cowboy
posse.
Movies?
Posse.
Posse. Thank you. Forms a posse, and to try to take these women back. And the stories about how they turned around when they got to the Benedictine place are unknown, because the stories are like angels appeared, or an angel of fire with a sword there, and they, so, but somehow they did turn around. And then after we got Uncle Manaldo off the stage, Guido the bishop approves the two sisters, and then with that approval, the what today is known as the Poor Clares, the Sisters of Clare all over the world, that's when it was born. So that's, now I want to just a few impressions about St. Clare. That she was so bright and so articulate and had such confidence that she gained the trust of the leaders of the church of her day. They sought her for advice when she didn't agree with the church. She had entrance right to the Pope himself, and she is known at different times to change the minds of hierarchy in the church. It gives you just such a, gives you an idea of what a woman. And if you want to study the women of the church through the ages, it's Clare that stands out as one of the great, great women. Now, so now St. Mary's is where the brothers are, and San Damiano is where the sisters are. I read one place there was some thought of having both together, but this was so far out of the possibility in that age. So now they are separate, and they become mostly cloistered, meaning they stay in the compound to live a life of prayer, supporting the brothers, except for Clare, who goes out on her missions. And there they work, and there they pray, and also they become very, very exquisite seamstresses, and they do all of the ropes and garbs and for the brothers. And there is very little communication between the two of them. There's a priest, Franciscan priest, who is appointed to be their chaplain. And on rare, rare occasions, Francis visits her, but they're very, very rare. So, and we'll bring her into the story later on, but that gives you a little background. And I haven't read a lot, and I want to continue to have present this almost as a parallel of one of the greatest men in church history and one of the greatest women. One of the stories that developed is there was a time later in Francis' life when they did meet, and the people in Assisi saw over towards the area, and it just looked like a great forest fire. There was so much fire and light, and this is called spiritual heat. And so that was... that was the report, because if there were ever two people, a man and a woman, who had the same mind, It was Francis and Claire. They also had some of the same medieval practices, which later Francis confessed as wrong, and that was to not take care of your own body. And here's part of the upside down, like when I talked about the refrigerators and the new cars. We also take aspirin and other medication and pills so we can grow towards less pain. Has anybody here ever taken a pill? I'm one of them. How do you understand this in this medieval piety that pain became good? And very early, Claire would, even before she left her family, she would do this in secret, was to put very rough hair clothing on, facing into her body so she could be in pain all day. And then Francis abused his, he wasn't healthy in the first place, but he abused his body because in medieval times this was thought of as a great spiritual exercise to abuse one's body. He called Mother Earth and Sister Dear and on, but he called his own body Brother Ass. It wasn't a real high. I want to just mention that to just say these are not people that were totally liberated by some Protestant Reformation. I want to say a word about one other woman. That when Francis was down in Rome, and every time he went to Rome, he had a vacation place. And it was with a widow who had two children. Her name was Jacoba, or Jacob. Jacoba Septisoldi. I'm getting better at my Italian. Septisoldi. She's also called in English Jacqueline. She was a wealthy, wealthy person. She was very, very devout and beautiful. She was of the nobility, and she became a spiritual daughter of Francis, who gave her the honor of calling her brother, Jacoba, brother. And this is what Francis is one little exception to kind of this desire to suffer was that she made almond cream cakes. I'm not sure if I can say it in Italian. Mostacchioli. Does anybody make
that? That sounds sweet.
Somebody say it that's good at it.
I heard.
Yeah, thank you. This is looking ahead, but on Francis's deathbed, that she walked all the way from Rome to Assisi so he could have one more before he died.
It's a pasta dish.
It's a pasta dish.
Yeah.
This must have been sweet.
A particular pasta dish.
Wow, isn't that? And, there it wasn't all, this was his little wonderful joy. Okay, now, the growth of the order of the brothers. By 1215, there were friars all over. They had gone to north and central Italy, southern France, and had gone into Spain. And they were disciplined so well that they were favored by almost everyone that they met. And there was no more ridicule of Franciscans as there had been before. they won the hearts of the church and the church hierarchy by practicing no greed, total honesty, simplicity, and not fighting the church. By this time in these areas, when they would arrive in a town, and when Francis would arrive in a town, the cry would be, "The saint is here, the saint is here." These were the times of the great preaching journeys of the brothers as they go into new lands to again preach the good news of the gospel and to call people to repent, change their way of living, forgive their enemies, and care for the poor. Now, this is a prelude where I want to say some words about Francis and creation, but at the same time this was happening, the dread of the Muslims, the Saracens, was growing and growing and growing, because I wouldn't have it accurate, but you can see Jerusalem, Syria, Turkey, and by this time the Muslims have moved into Spain. They have moved into what we now call from Turkey into Eastern Europe. And now the fervor for the Crusades is building. And near this time of St. Francis is the sadness of the children's Crusades, where the children of Europe went off to war, thinking by their innocence they would win, and most of them died or were turned into slaves of Muslim people. Okay, now, we'll get back to that, because that is a major, major where we want to go now is...
Could I jump? Question. How did he react to being called a saint?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. My guess is that he would have, he was so, had such a sense of equality. Sense of equality, that he, it isn't what he would want.
He would downplay.
Yeah. So, one little incident, was Francis human? And once he was very embarrassed, because one day in the winter, he was so missing being married to a woman, having family and having children, that he went out into the snow by himself and built a snowman, snow people's family, and just kind of prayed there his lament that he never would be part of this. And one of the brothers saw him, and is very embarrassed about this. But it's a little insight into, here's a real person. Francis and creation, let's look at that, because in our day, Francis almost is narrowed down to the saint of ecology, and has been, just embraced by the secular world as the great champion of creation, or of nature, and rightly so, and I think we're proud as a family of faith. I think that one of our people has become a model for all of the world, and for both care of creation and for peace. When a decade or so ago, or maybe more, when all the leaders of all the world religions or leaders wanted to meet together to talk about how their religions could promote peace. And where did they choose to meet? In Assisi. So, but let's look at Francis in creation. He truly, truly loved and found joy in the sun and the moon and the stars, pleasure in the little things, in the beauty of flowers. He cherished and embraced every form of life to the point of took them forever with the brothers to get any place when they were going to some place because he had to look at the birds, look at the animals, and what really held them up, he would, all the worms that were crawling across the road, he would pick up and place on the other side of the floor, in the wagons or something, that none of them would be squished. Talk to the flowers, talk to the birds, to the animals. He brought warm wine and honey to bees in the winter. He built nests for the doves. Two sheep on their way to slaughter, and Claire or someone had just made him a brand new cloak, which he traded for the two sheep so they wouldn't die. He just loved all creation except ants. No problem with mosquitoes, it's just ants. And his negative feelings for ants were that they were just too busy all the time. You know, they didn't take any time, like a bird will
sit. Too much work ethic.
Yeah, they just are working all the time and doing. So they didn't like ants. And his favorite bird was the crested lark. Is there a birder here? It'd be fun to see what a crested lark looks like. Then there are many stories that were built up around his love for animals. Probably the most famous is the Wolf of Gubbio. And the Wolf of Gubbio was one of these wolf stories of the angry wolf that came into the town of Gubbio and killed several people. And so they formed these parties to go out and kill the wolf. And then Francis made a deal for them that if he would promise the wolf that they would feed the wolf for the rest of his life, would the wolf promise to not kill anybody else? And they were horrified when Francis just went walking out into the woods, met the wolf, and they had a discussion. The wolf promised that he wouldn't kill anybody, as the people had promised. It was covenant making. And so the wolf lived until the wolf died in Gubbio as their favorite pet. Now this, the search for the historical Francis, you know, these are the stories that build up, but they're true in that we've known people. You see them sometimes on Animal Planet, don't you? And the pet psychologist that appears late at night when I'm brushing my teeth. But have a way of communicating with animals. And to think of Francis this way, see, I can tell the story because Karen has left her dish team, but she has this. Before I married her, she had a roommate that had two dogs. And these dogs would poop in the house. And she, that's one reason she married me. To get out of this living situation. And so her housemate would go on trips occasionally and ask Karen to watch the dogs. So she was gone. As soon as she got in the car, Karen talked to them about not pooping in the house, and they never did. They never did until her housemate got back. I've sensed this all along, and you know people too that have a special way of communicating. And Francis must have been someone like that. Which doesn't make the Wolf of Gubbio story too far-fetched. You know, I tried this once when I was jogging, and this angry dog jumped out of the bushes. I scared the thing, and saw him coming after me with teeth and hair up, and I just knelt down on the road and spoke quietly to the dog as the dog came. and bit my arm. Then I was making some progress because he rolled over on his back so I could rub his stomach. And every time I'd stop rubbing his stomach, he would start. Well, now I'm gonna get serious about Francis' kinship with animals. It was not based on, aren't animals cute? You know, or aren't they, won't they make nice pets? But there was something about the animals that connected to Francis in the decision he had made about how to live as a human being, following the gospel, as he put it, or following Christ. And that was, animals are poor. And from yesterday now, here I'm talking about the evangelical poverty, which we'll talk about. But animals are poor, meaning every day the animal wakes up and owns nothing. And every morning the animal depends on the Creator for the food for that day. And the Creator provides that food. And the animals do not want any more. You open your hands and satisfy the desire of every living thing. And so it was in Francis' emptying of himself of accumulation as a human being that he met the entire animal face to face and heart to heart. Do you get that? Yeah, see how that differs from kind of a normal loving nature. Yeah. And they became the example for his preaching. He could say, as Jesus did, look at the birds. They don't sow or reap, and yet your Heavenly Father feeds them. And now you're fine bringing up questions when you're discussing this, like, is this realistic for human beings? So, but that's where he found his connection. And that's where his song came from. And for a preview on our last session, the assignment is to bring an LBW. And we're going to sing All Creatures of Our God and King, and then I'll tell the story about how he wrote this song. But everything then was brother, sister, brother, son, sister, moon, sister, deer. Every animal was a brother or a sister. So this is how Francis became such a light for the world when it comes to our living with nature. And is there ever a time when we need to listen again to Francis? I'm going to stop there, and then we might go a little longer, but what I've shared so far, what are your thoughts and what are your...
When he lived, what was the attitude toward animals?
Ooh, I don't know. I mean,
as inferior creatures to be killed and eaten. And like we do.
Yeah, I would guess it would be similar. But I'm guessing.
Was he vegetarian?
No. So the only reason I know that is from one of the wonderful stories about Francis, which I assume. Was when I would guess he was probably mostly a vegetarian, but one Christmas day the brothers decided that they were going to fast on Christmas Day, and Francis was so angry with them for fasting on the day of the festival of the birth of our Lord that he ran and got beef. and he cooked it. And in front of the brothers, he smeared it all over the walls, so even the walls could feast on Christmas Day. And then the brothers got it. But all of these things, these stories like this one show that there was, in the midst of this very, very strict obedience to, that there were these, that it wasn't a legal, it wasn't a legalism, but it was more of a rhythm. Does that make sense? So, yeah.
I had a thought as you were talking about land power and Francis, that land power was such a resounding success for Francis, mm-hmm. and such an abysmal failure for the Jews in Europe and during World War II, because mm-hmm. they were practicing land power.
That's a hard one, because but the way I like to respond to that, probably the Jewish people knew only the two options. That is basically what most Americans, is that the only two options are to fight, and that was impossible for them, or to just they weren't able to flee, but to just to finally take it. But I mean, it's really hard to start trying to analyze what they should have done. It really wasn't a land power would have been. There's a difference between lamb and land power. Land power would be to think of surprise, nonviolent ways to throw off the enemy. Which, as we have not learned those surprise ways, probably most of the Jewish people hadn't learned them either. There are stories in Jewish history where they did use land power that are very, which became a part of power that made the enemy back away. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's maybe jumping ahead to, but at the time, 1214, he went to Spain, and at that time, was Islam still a favored religion in Spain at that time, or was that after they got into conflict there in Spain?
With the
Islam faith.
Yeah. You know, all I know is at the time that Francis went to Spain, that Muslims, Arabs had made a real beachhead and a real, and I haven't quite figured out how,
They controlled the majority of the peninsula for almost 700 years. So the Christians were pushed back to the north.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I invite responses to any questions because I don't know a lot. I mean, there's many things that I don't.
Is there a community anywhere of Franciscans that you've connected with personally, or?
I've met Franciscans, but not a community. And I love to once in a while meet a Franciscan. This is where I keep these questions in my mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're all over the world.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Last summer, the North American Association for the Catechumenate had their annual gathering in Rochester, Minnesota at Assisi Heights Conference Center, which was the mother house of the Sisters of Clare.
Uh-huh.
And it was built up on the hill over Rochester in pale colored stone with red tile roofs to look like Assisi. And I think that when the mother house was built, they could accommodate 800 or 900 sisters, and now they're down to 70 sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The average age is 75.
They're all seniors.
Senior citizens. And the money that's needed by Roman Catholics just to feed them and take care of them until death is a crisis, isn't it?
Yeah. Just outside Chicago, there's Little Sisters of the Poor, mm-hmm. which is for the elderly. Mm-hmm. And all of the sisters who are in the convent in Milwaukee will come there to take care of the elderly as they get elderly. And the reason I know that is I had a neighbor whose daughter was one of the nuns of the mm-hmm. Sister of the Poor, and she came there to take care of her mother. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's one Lutheran Franciscan in North America. He's, mm-hmm. he's been here to Holden. Very interesting character. Has a little hermitage up in Vancouver, BC, and does street ministry. So, just a little interesting.
Yeah. So to achieve sainthood, you would have had to do some miracles or something kind of ordinary, other than these legends you said. How was he granted sainthood?
Oh, I think there were... there were plenty of stories of what would be seen as miraculous
right.
from Francis. So.
Was he a healer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, I haven't, you know, exactly how extended. I don't know.
Dan, you said yesterday you talked a little bit about the convergence of Francis and Luther around the idea of grace mm-hmm. as central. Are you going to do that tomorrow?
We're running out. I was going to do that today. I bet it passed.
I think you
forgot. Passed over grace.
Get back to grace.
Here it comes. I can't find it, but I'll remember.
Can you do it without notes?
Yeah. There were two times, kind of windows into this. Is one, Luther had his tower experience, and Francis had an experience in his early life that God was only merciful and forgiving, and he rested in that grace. And he never had any sense of works righteousness.
Uh-huh.
Also connected to the part of this experience was the sins of his youth, you know, which he was, you know, he obviously committed many transgressions as we in his sexual life and other ways as a youth, and he brought that to God. Asking forgiveness, and after the word of forgiveness came to him, he never worried about that again. He was so confident in he didn't use Lutheran words, but just the free and unconditional grace. And another window into that, once his brothers came up, and the church at that time was so corrupt, you know, and they were impatient with him because somebody's got to get up and start naming what's wrong with the church, and he's not doing it. And his response was, we were saved only by the love of God, and the church is going to be saved only by love coming from us. So isn't that an insight into, you know, so he also thought of himself, like Paul, as the greatest sinner. And not in a kind of a prideful way, but he said, and it's true, and he knew it from his youth, he was so gifted. I mean, here he was in music and comedy and speaking and articulating countless ways, music, I guess I said that, but, and he said, I'm the greatest sinner on earth because I was given the most, and therefore the most is expected of me. But then he didn't have he didn't walk in guilt about that because he turned that over and to God's mercy and God's love.
Grace may abound.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are the Franciscans known for music at all? Or dancing?
I don't know.
I just thought of that.
Yeah. I just know the medical missionary sisters were really good. I used to listen to them back in the 60s. Anybody listen to them? I don't know if they were Franciscan or not. But, yeah, was there?
Yeah, Miriam Teresa Winter has done phenomenal work in the peace movement and continues to. She wrote a recent autobiography and traveled all over the world doing music, playing music.
Is she Franciscan? But she was medical missionary.
Yes, medical missionary movement. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wrote her when I was 4 years old and sent her art picture, and she wrote me a personal letter saying they'd try to come visit us and bring sleeping bags.
Well, my uncle, who's a friend,
sweet.
You know, one of the most well-known folk singers is a Franciscan. Anybody remember his name?
John Michael Talbot.
Yeah, John Michael Talbot. Franciscan. Yeah.
Dan?
Yeah.
How would you define a Lutheran Franciscan?
Like the person up in B.C.?
What differentiates that from a Franciscan?
That he has taken the vows of Francis that would have been in this first order, or the first rule of St. Francis. Also, if you ever see a Franciscan, their rope around them has three knots, and those three knots are the three promises, you know, which is poverty, celibacy, and
obedience.
Does he worship as a Lutheran now?
He's a Lutheran pastor. He's still ordained, and this is his call.
Dan, what's his name?
It's Brother something. Brian. We need to get him back to Holden. He's the one that should be teaching. Francis. I wanted to give a little introduction to Francis in the Muslim world, because then one spend most of tomorrow on Francis in the Muslim world. But Francis, both personally, of seeking peace between people by the forgiving of other people rather than revenge, also sought peace for the whole world. And the major, major conflict, of course, then was the Crusades, which were devastating the people of Europe as they went to be slaughtered and to slaughter both Muslims and also Orthodox Eastern Christians that were massacred. I remember one reason for this that they said was they look like Muslims and dress like them. You know, so the and also Jewish people, a righteous cause of these fervent sermons in the churches throughout of Europe, the promises of indulgences, so it was the Crusades, and now. Francis was passionate about the way to peace. Again, we would call this naive. But his passion was, if the Muslims hear the gospel of Jesus, they will become Christians. And if we're all Christians, then there will be peace, which was also a little naive. So he had this passion to be a missionary to the Muslims, and he kept failing. His first was to go to Syria, and he actually got to the seacoast and got on the boat, and there was a terrible storm that turned around, and so he never made it to Syria. Then his next was to go to Spain and then convert Muslims there. He also, this would be very medieval too, but he also wanted to be a martyr. And part of being a missionary to Spain would be to improve his chances. And we're going to close part of where we'll close this is with the theology of the cross. You'll notice as we're going through these, go through the rest of the story, Francis basically fails at everything he dreams about. And now his dream is to convert the Muslims. Goes to Spain and becomes very, very ill. But while he is there, he does make the pilgrimage walk that many, many people. Has anyone here part of the pilgrimage walk in Spain? On the, yes.
Campo Stella?
Yeah, right. But then becomes very, very sick. Some think it's a relapse of his malaria that he had when he was a prisoner of war. But he had other things, all kinds of medical diagnoses that have been made, including just not taking care of his body. So becomes very, very sick in Spain. So then he has to be taken back to Assisi to recover. So he never makes it as a missionary in Spain. So then as he gets his strength back, then the next is to go to Egypt. In Egypt, where the next great war of the Crusades and the final war is brewing, and that is the Fifth Crusade, that he will go down there, and how will he stop this war from beginning? He'll convert the Muslims by preaching Christ, and they'll all become Christians. And so that's where we'll begin tomorrow when Francis gets off the boat in Egypt, there to only do two little programs, stop the war and convert all the Muslims to Christianity. So that's the next part of the story. We'll see you again, and what will be fun is he takes his whole personality with him to Egypt, winsome, endearing, the power of his integrity, he'll take it there and try to stop the crusade.
Thank you.
Yeah.